Chapter 5. 50 Voices. Hat settles it, the money's Wilson's. Wilson. Wilson. Speech. Speech. People jumped up and crowded around Wilson, wringing his hand and congratulating fervently. Meantime, the chair was hammering with the gavel and shouting, "Order, gentlemen. Order. Order. Let me finish reading, please." When quiet was restored, the reading was resumed as follows. "Go, and reform, or, mark my words, someday, for your sins you will die and go to hell or Adleyburg. Try, and make it the former." Apostrophe, a ghastly silence followed. First an angry cloud began to settle darkly upon the faces of the citizenship. After a pause the cloud began to rise, and a tickled expression tried to take its place. Tried so hard, that it was only kept under with great and painful difficulty. The reporters, the Brixtonites, and other strangers bent their heads down, and shielded their faces with their hands, and managed to hold in by main strength and heroic courtesy. At this most inopportune time burst upon the stillness the roar of a solitary voice, "Jack Halliday's. That's got the hall mark on it." Then the house let go, strangers and all. Even Mr. Burgess's gravity broke down presently. Then the audience considered itself officially absolved from all restraint, and it made the most of its privilege. It was a good long laugh, and a tempestuously wholehearted one, but it ceased at last long enough for Mr. Burgess to try to resume, and for the people to get their eyes partially wiped. Then it broke out again, and afterward yet again. Then at last Burgess was able to get out these serious words. "It is useless to try to disguise the fact we find ourselves in the presence of a matter of grave import. It involves the honor of your town, it strikes at the town's good name. The difference of a single word between the test remarks offered by Mr. Wilson and Mr. Bilson was itself a serious thing, since it indicated that one or the other of these gentlemen had committed a theft." The two men were sitting limp, nerveless, crushed, but at these words both were electrified into movement, and started to get up. "Sit down," said the chair, sharply, and they obeyed. Hat, as I have said, was a serious thing. And it was but for only one of them. But the matter has become graver, for the honor of both is now in formidable peril. Shall I go even further, and say in inextricable peril? Both left out the crucial 15 words. He paused. During several moments he allowed the pervading stillness to gather, and deepen its impressive effects, then added, "Here would seem to be but one way whereby this could happen. I ask these gentlemen, was there collusion? Agreement?" A low murmur sifted through the house. Its import was, "He's got them both." Bilson was not used to emergencies. He sat in a helpless collapse. But Wilson was a lawyer. He struggled to his feet, pale and worried, and said, "I ask the indulgence of the house, while I explain this most painful matter. I am sorry to say what I am about to say, since it must inflict irreparable injury upon Mr. Bilson, whom I have always esteemed and respected until now, and in whose invulnerability to temptation I entirely believed, as did you all. But for the preservation of my own honor I must speak, and with frankness. I confess with shame, and I now beseech your pardon for it, that I said to the ruined stranger all of the words contained in the test remark, including the disparaging 15. Sensation. When the late publication was made I recalled them, and I resolved to claim the sack of coin, for by every right I was entitled to it. Now I will ask you to consider this point, and weigh it well. That stranger's gratitude to me that night knew no bounds. He said himself that he could find no words for it that were adequate, and that if he should ever be able he would repay me a thousandfold. Now then, I ask you this. Could I expect, could I believe, could I even remotely imagine that, feeling as he did, he would do so ungrateful a thing as to add those quite unnecessary 15 words to his test? Set a trap for me? Expose me as a slanderer of my own town before my own people assembled in a public hall? It was preposterous. It was impossible. His test would contain only the kindly opening clause of my remark. Of that I had no shadow of doubt. He would have thought as I did. He would not have expected a base betrayal from one whom you had befriended, and against whom you had committed no offense. And so with perfect confidence, perfect trust, I wrote on a piece of paper the opening words ending with O, and reform, and signed it. When I was about to put it in an envelope, I was called into my back office, and without thinking I left the paper lying open on my desk. He stopped, turned his head slowly toward Bilson, waited a moment, then added, "Ask you to note this. When I returned, a little later, Mr. Bilson was retiring by my street door. Sensation." In a moment, Bilson was on his feet and shouting, "It's a lie. It's an infamous lie. The chair. Be seated, sir. Mr. Wilson has the floor." Bilson's friends pulled him into his seat and quieted him, and Wilson went on. "Those are the simple facts. My note was now lying in a different place on the table from where I had left it. I noticed that, but attached no importance to it, thinking a draft had blown it there. That Mr. Bilson would read a private paper was a thing which could not occur to me. He was an honorable man, and he would be above that. If he will allow me to say it, I think his extraordinary stance explained. It is attributable to a defect of memory. I was the only man in the world who could furnish here any detail of the test mark by honorable means. I have finished. There is nothing in the world like a persuasive speech to fuddle the mental apparatus and upset the convictions, and debauch the emotions of an audience not practiced in the tricks and delusions of oratory." Wilson sat down victorious. The house submerged him in tides of approving applause. Friends swarmed to him, and shook him by the hand and congratulated him, and Bilson was shouted down, and not allowed to say a word. The chair hammered and hammered with its gavel, and kept shouting, "But let us proceed, gentlemen, let us proceed." At last there was a measurable degree of quiet, and the hatter said, "But what is there to proceed with, sir, but to deliver the money?" Voices. "That's it. That's it. Come forward, Wilson." The hatter. "Move three cheers for Mr. Wilson," symbol of the special virtue which the cheers burst forth, before he could finish. And in the midst of them, and in the midst of the clamor of the gavel also, some enthusiasts mounted Wilson on a big friend's shoulder, and were going to fetch him in triumph to the platform. The chair's voice now rose above the noise. "Order! To your places! You forget that there is still a document to be read." When quiet had been restored, he took up the document, and was going to read it, but laid it down again saying, "Forgot. This is not to be read until all written communications received by me have first been read." He took an envelope out of his pocket, removed its enclosure, glanced at it, seemed astonished, held it out, and gazed at it, stared at it. 20 or 30 voices cried out, "What is it? Read it. Read it." And he did, slowly, and wondering. "The remark which I made to the stranger," voices. "Hello. How's this? Was this? You are far from being a bad man." Voices. "Great Scott. Go, and reform." Voice. "H. Saw my leg off." Signed by Mr. Pinkerton the banker. The pandemonium of delight which turned itself loose now was of a sort to make the judicious weep. Those whose withers were unwrung laughed till the tears ran down. The reporters, in throes of laughter, set down disordered pot hooks which would never in the world be decipherable, and a sleeping dog jumped up scared out of its wits, and barked itself crazy at the turmoil. All manner of cries were scattered through the din. "Ear getting rich, two symbols of incorruptibility. Without counting Bilson. Re. Count Shadbilly in, we can't have too many. LL Wright, Bilson's elected. Loss, poor Wilson. Victim of two thieves." A powerful voice. "Islands." The chairs fished up something more out of its pocket. Voices. "Is it something fresh? Read it. Read. Read." the chair reading, the remark which I made, apostrophe etc. You are far from being a bad man. Go, apostrophe etc. Signed, Gregory Yates. Tornado of voices. Our symbols. Rafford Yates. Michigan. The house was in a roaring humor now, and ready to get all the fun out of the occasion that might be in it. Several 19ers, looking pale and distressed, got up and began to work their way towards the aisles, but a score of shouts went up. The doors, close the doors. No incorruptible shall leave this place. Sit down, everybody. The mandate was obeyed. Fish again. Read. Read. The chair fished again, and once more the familiar words began to fall from its lips. You are far from being a bad man. Name. Name. What's his name? Ellen Goldsby Sargent. Five elected. Pile up the symbols. Go on, go on. You are far from being a bad name. Name. Nicholas Whitworth. Apostrophe, hooray. Hooray. It's a symbolical day. Somebody wailed in, and began to sing this rhyme, leaving out its, to the lovely staccato tune of "N A Man's Afraid of a Beautiful Maid." The audience joined in, with joy. Then, just in time, somebody contributed another line dash, "And don't you this forget," the house roared it out. A third line was at once furnished dash, "Corruptibles far from Adleyburg are," the house roared that one too. As the last note died, Jack Halliday's voice rose high and clear, freighted with a final line dash, "But the symbols are here, you bet." That was sung, with booming enthusiasm. Then the happy house started in at the beginning, and sang the four lines through twice, with immense swing and dash, and finished up with a crashing 3-3, and a tiger for Adleyburg the Incorruptible, and all symbols of it which we shall find worthy to receive the hallmark tonight. Then the shoutings at the chair began again, all over the place. Go on, go on. Read. Read some more. Read all you've got. That's it, go on. We are winning eternal celebrity. A dozen men got up now, and began to protest. They said that this farce was the work of some abandoned joker, and was an insult to the whole community. Without a doubt these signatures were all forgeries dash, sit down, sit down. Shut up. You are confessing. We'll find your names in the lot. Mr. Chairman, how many of those envelopes have you got? The chair counted. Together with those that have been already examined, there are 19. A storm of derisive applause broke out. Perhaps they all contain the secret. I move that you open them all, and read every signature that is attached to a note of that sort, and read also the first 8 words of the note. Second the motion. It was put and carried uproariously. Then poor old Richards got up, and his wife rose and stood at his side. Her head was bent down, so that none might see that she was crying. Her husband gave her his arm, and so supporting her, he began to speak in a quavering voice. My friends, you have known us too, Mary and me, all our lives, and I think you have liked us, and respected us, the chair interrupted him. Allow me. It is quite true that which you are saying, Mr. Richards. This town does know you too. It does like you. It does respect you. More, it honors you, and loves you, Halliday's voice rang out. That's the hallmark truth too. If the chair is right, let the house speak up and say it. Rise. Now, then, hip. 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 All together. The house rose in mass, faced toward the old couple eagerly, filled the air with a snowstorm of waving handkerchiefs, and delivered the cheers with all its affectionate heart. The chair then continued. What I was going to say is this. We know your good heart, Mr. Richards, but this is not a time for the exercise of charity toward offenders. Shouts of, right. Right. I see your generous purpose in your face, but I cannot allow you to plead for these men, but I was going to, please take your seat, Mr. Richards. We must examine the rest of these notes, simple fairness to the men who have already been. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.